Good evening. I'm Norman B., and this is FM 108's Late Show. I came across the following obituary in the March 5th edition of Variety, and it's on page 118. It reads as follows. John Richburg, 75, longtime Nashville disc jockey, most popular during the 1950s and 60s, died February 15th, 1986, in Nashville of cancer. He was among the first to play rhythm and blues records in the 1940s and developed his large following in the following decades at WLAC-AM. He retired in 1973 following 32 years in broadcasting. John Richburg called himself John R. And my name is Norman Blakely. I call myself Norman B. And it's because of the influence of John R. that I adopted that name, which is a story that I guess could be told at a different date. Tonight we have a tribute to this great disc jockey. John R. played what I like to refer to as the original underground music. He was the first person in North America, as far as I know, to expose the public at large to what was rhythm and blues music and later became known as rock and roll. His influence was phenomenal. Ask any musician who was listening to radio in the 50s and early 60s, and they'll tell you the same. Before Alan Freed, before George Hound Dog Lorenz, before Murray the K, before any of them, there was John Richburg. He was the first, and to my mind, the greatest disc jockey who ever broadcasted in North America in this century. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a tribute we did, well, 3 or 4 years ago, I guess. That was the time that I got enough nerve to phone up John Richburg. I hunted for his address. I think I got it from a rock and roll singer by the name of Matt Lucas. I phoned him up, and he was very gracious, and gracious enough to give us a few moments of his time, and we talked to him about his history and about the music. John Richburg, our tribute to the late John Richburg, as originally presented in 1982. Still alive after all these years. It started out as R&B. This is a good example of pop R&B. Buster Brown's song, Fannie Mae. A song that was broken, made famous, first played on the radio by John Richburg. Rhythm and blues started out as underground music, rhythm and blues, race music, call it what you will, with artists like Ruth Brown and Charles Brown and Ray Charles and Ivory Joe Hunter and Joe Turner and Amos Milburn and early Fats Domino and Lightning Hopkins and many more. And the first man to ever play this rhythm and blues music on the radio was John Richburg, or as he was better known, Big John R., down at WLAC in Nashville, Tennessee. 50,000 watts covering the entire continent. John R. had the original underground radio program. And in later years, he kept at it, pumping out the real underground music up till 1973, in fact. Elvis Presley, Roy Orbison, Buddy Holly, The Canned Heat, Paul Butterfield, everybody listened to John R. Later, Alan Freed and George Hound Dog Lorenz and others would come along, but John R. was the first. His style was hip, unlike anything ever heard, really. And everybody thought John R. was black, but he wasn't. He was the first of the blue-eyed soul DJs, and when he went on, there weren't even any stations playing black music or rhythm and blues anywhere in the world. The music that would later become rock and roll. I used to listen to John R., and he was my idol. I'd never heard anybody like him, and I guess I patterned myself after John R. For many years. He even did and played the kind of music he played in the 60s in Toronto. And at that time, King Curtis said, I was the best white guy he had heard on the radio since he heard John R., and he said, I should call myself Norman B. And since John R. was my idol, that's where I've been ever since. A lot of people remember John R. Here's Wolfman Jack.
Well, back in those days, you got to remember, you know, there was on those big, powerful stations, you know, there was like WLAC in Nashville. That's where John R. was broadcasting from. And then there was WSM in Nashville, which was country music. And then there was WCK.
Huh? wasn't easy to hear, John R.
Don't you be
out. You had to turn the radio around the right way.
That's a new thing. John R. went down south in the middle of Dixie. Spread a little joy around all over.
Special K remembers John R.
We got Kenny Wells here. And Kenny, you're one of the few guys that was listening to radio back in the 50s and involved in radio in the 50s.
That's right. I used to, I was working, I forget where I was working. Was I working? Did I have a job?
Yeah, I remember.
Oh, no, I remember I worked at in Niagara Falls. Did you ever work at that radio station?
No.
It was the Pits.
The one on the bridge?
It was in the bridge. It was in the bridge. It was a funny radio station. It was weird. They used to have a water-cooled transmitter.
You know, you got a unique...
You can believe that.
You got a unique style, unlike most jocks around today. And there was a guy who sort of started that, I thought, and I thought that was John R. You remember listening to John R.?
Yeah, John R. was... I loved them. I used to lay in bed at night and up in the Muskoka area, because it used to boom in there, Perry Sound area. And you could get them quite clearly coming from that station. What was it? Where was it? Tennessee, was it?
WLAC.
And Tennessee? Was it Tennessee?
Yep.
Yeah, Tennessee. And, God, he was great. He had like, great voices and all that, doing all that
and
stuff.
And the music.
And the music was the best.
Come on. You got that Morse code. I'm getting your message.
Further on up the road.
It's my pleasure to be talking to one of the most influential of all disc jockeys, I guess, of the rock and roll and rhythm and blues era, the one and only John Richburg. How are you, John Richburg?
And fine. How about you, Norman B., right?
That's right. You know, I got my name by King Curtis. He said that at the time I was sort of Canada's version of John R., and I think that's the greatest compliment I ever received, John.
Oh, isn't that fine? I appreciate you hearing that. Old Curtis was a nice guy. I enjoyed, he was some sax man, too, you know?
You know, something I've always wondered, how did you get the name John R.?
Well, you know, my mail used to come in, my name, Richburg, or actually R-I-C-H-B-O-U-R-G, I'm a French Huguenot. And they didn't spell it correctly. It would come in Richard Bug. You know, they thought I was saying Richard Bug. Mm-hmm. John A-R-E, and all that sort of thing. So I just said, to heck with the last name. We won't worry about that. We'll just take the first letter of the last name and go with that. So that's what I did. And it helped a lot, but the mail would still come in all confused, like John O-R-E, John A-R-E, John A-R-R-A-H, you know, all that sort of thing.
John,
about
when did you first start playing rhythm and blues music?
Oh, gee, I got back out of service in 1946 and went back to WLAC and began a record show at that time. And very shortly, we deliberately went into the R&B field because there was actually nothing in this part of the country at all that the black folks could listen to and enjoy. And we deliberately started playing black music primarily to attract a large black audience. But we got half and half, black and white, really. Oh, but that's the reason that we began playing the black music. When we started, it was very difficult to find. Very few labels were doing it, you know.
What kind of records would you be playing around 1947 and 48?
Well, gee, anything we could find. Most of it, of course, with Jimmy Lunsford and that type of thing, the big band sound, you know. But gradually, we'd pick up anything we could find in the blues field, anything. Some of the old cornfield-type blues, you know, Lightning Hopkins, because that was Lou Toy's time, but there were certain other acts at the time. And every time we'd come across a blues record, I'd go out two or three times a week and just search every record shop in town, looking for black music.
Morning and I can't get right. Had a little date with my baby last night. Now it's early in the morning. Thank you.
realize that there were white folks listening to this as well as black folks.
Get a lot of mail out of colleges, white colleges. That's what tipped me off. And gradually, you know, you can usually tell from the mail and that sort of thing. We became convinced that it was probably, and this is strictly an off-the-top-of-the-head guess, but the radio station and myself, we figured about 60-40, 60 black, 40 white.
You know, at the time, there was no real music that young people could really call their own, and I guess this was, I think, in many ways, the first real underground music.
Well, I guess you're right about that, because actually, we were playing some of the old raunchy, low-down cornfield blues, you know.
My star won't start this morning, and I'm about to lose my mind.
Away at the age of 75 of cancer on February 15th of 1986.
I had a real pretty woman who said she loved no one but me.
When did things really take off? Around 1950, 51, 52?
Beg your pardon?
When did things really take off with the independent labels? Around 51 or 52, is that when R&B really caught on?
That's right, the early 50s. What I started saying a moment ago, gradually the labels tipped to the fact that they were missing a great segment of humanity, you know. The black folks, they buy records too, you know. Well, they started putting out black music. And labels began springing up. You know, the old black and white label, the old score label, and of course... I can't name them now. There's so many of them now, but, I mean, at that time there were very few, but Chess came in, and Atlantic came in a little later. They came in about the middle 50s, as I recall. But there were a lot of sort of way-out labels in the early 50s doing black music.
John, back in the early 50s, what were some of your most requested artists? Were there any particular favorites? Was it Ruth Brown or was it the Down Home Blues? I noticed you always played a lot of Down Home Blues on your programs, more than any other person I ever heard.
That's what I used to call cornfield blues, you know. That's what I mean by cornfield blues. Well, I know Ruth Brown was always a big act, of course. And Ivory Joe Hunter, there were Bull Moose Jackson. I don't suppose you remember him.
Yeah, I love you, yes I do, and a lot of those things, right?
Baby, I don't know why I love you. I don't know why I feel this way. Baby, I don't know why I love you. I don't know why I feel this way.
This is Ruth Brown. Do you have a little squeal in the voice? That's where Little Richard got his squeal.
Turned around and with a frown said, this ain't no circus and I don't need a clown. You guys ain't nothing but trash. You guys ain't nothing but trash.
Most people know about the early rhythm and blues. It was played in the early 50s now. But at the time, it was not available anywhere. John R. was the only man playing it anywhere.
I tried to get a Cadillac right quick. The man at the place looked.
These are the Clovers.
$900 and some change. We disagreed. I trash in nothing but trash. You cash in nothing but trash. You cash in nothing but trash. Baby, you're crawling way past your speed.
Back in, I guess it was 1950, 51. And I did it from then on, as long as I was on the station.
Do you know the influence of that?
That's like 25, let's see, how many years? 73, 51 to 73, about 22 years.
Do you know the influence that that program has had over the years and on musicians who listen to that show? Have you ever got the feedback?
Oh, yeah. We used to do anywhere from 350 to 500 orders per day, 6 days a week. And each order would average 5 to 6 to 7 records. That's a lot of records, man.
Now you're laughing, pretty baby. Someday you're gonna be crying. Rolling up the road.
Come in and sit in on your show.
Well, I just about anybody that came to Nashville came up to the radio station, but I very seldom interviewed. I did not make it a practice of interviewing the acts. I might have a word or two to say on the air to them, but very, very, very few times that happened. I just didn't believe in it, you know.
Why was that, John R?
It didn't do good for the show, really.
In other words, the people wanted to hear the music.
That's what they wanted to hear, man. They couldn't care any less about a few inane questions I might ask some act, you know. I guess I spent more time with Joe Simon on the air than any other act that I know of offhand, and James Brown. I interviewed those two acts once or twice, but I kept the interviews real short. You know, about where were you born and how did you get into music? You know, the stock thing. Just the stock questions.
Just about everywhere. The girls are really gone on Royal Crown hairdressing. Even old long tall Sally uses it. And you know something, Gene? I goes for the girls with that Royal Crown look, cause man, huh, she's got it.
That was Little Richard doing a commercial down at WLAC. And you know, those records were not heard anywhere else. I'm thinking of Slim Harpo and Lightnin' Slim. I guess you knew those guys, huh?
Yeah, practically all the acts. But you see, what happened, we were breaking records right and left due to the power and due to the mass audiences we had. So, record labels would send the records to us first. We requested it that way, and we got the records usually a couple of weeks before most of the other stations. You know, they come to us like airmail special delivery, you know? And we'd go ahead with it, and by the time a lot of the stations got it, the record was already hot. We could break a record in a week or 10 days, in those days, you know. I mean, busted wide open all over the South.
John, what?
WLEC got, a notable example. This came several years after that. Otis Redding, you remember these arms of mine, Otis Redding?
Yep. I think that was his first record with Hey Hey Baby, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't his first record.
No, it was his second or third, okay.
The first hit he had.
Right.
Played that record 8 months. And it finally came in. The reason I played it 8 months, people kept on writing for it. They loved it. They wanted to hear it, but they weren't buying it. You see what I mean? Finally, after about 6 months of all three or four times a week play on my program, nobody else was playing it that I know of anywhere, the record began to happen. Well, as it developed into one of the top records, one of his big records of all time. It was his first big hit anyway.
Salad Andy on your show months before anybody else played it. You broke that one.
That was, I forgot the name of the artist. I know him very well. What was his name?
Tony Joe White.
Oh, yeah, Tony Joe White, yeah. Fine person. He was on Monument label at that time. Now, we broke that record at LAC. I did. Nobody else was playing it there but me. And I was playing it for Fred Spirit because Fred Foster and I are very close friends.
You snow girl lived down.
What are some of the other records you broke, John R., that you feel you were responsible for?
Get home and cook it to supper.
Beg your pardon?
What are some of the other records that you feel that you broke?
Well, I wouldn't say that there were very few that I would say that I broke by myself, you know. But there were a few. These arms of mine, and one of them, a notable example. And Another one that High Wash put out. What was that doggone thing? Way back then. Dolphine. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Great record.
And I played that 7 or 8 months, too. The same sort of a situation as These Arms of Mine.
So fine, yeah.
You had such an informal style, such a casual style, such a hip style, and it was unlike what any other white jock was doing. Everybody thought you were black, you know.
Oh, I know. And that's true. That's absolutely true. As a matter of fact, people would come to the radio station, look me in the eye, and say, I'd like to talk to John R. I'd say, you're talking to him, and the mom would fly him. They wouldn't believe it. I'm sitting there doing the program, and they couldn't believe it. They'd walk into the control room.
Do you know why WLAC quit playing Rhythm and Blues? Why they don't play it anymore?
They just wanted to go into They were going for national ratings. That's what the picture was. And the program director at the time, he wanted Dick Kent. He wanted 24-hour. He wanted to think all the way through till midnight. You see what I mean? He wanted to schedule. We were doing rock during the day. And he wanted to do the rock all the way through till midnight. And I just refused to change my type of programming. So that's one of the other reasons why I quit, too, because they were putting some pressure on me. Nobody picked my record. I made my own show together. I put my own show together. So did Bill Allen. So did Gene Nobles. The program director began trying to... put music on my show, I just sort of lost interest in it, you know what I mean? I just wouldn't do it. I refused to do it.
Well, you were the last of the great old jocks who did their own thing, their own way.
One of the last, I guess, yeah.
John, whatever happened to Bill Allen and Gene Nobles and Herman Bizard?
Well, Herman passed away. Gene Nobles is, he's still around Nashville. He's pretty badly crippled with arthritis. Bill Allen is still on the station. He's doing gospel music from 3, I think, till 5 in the morning, something like that. But it's on tape, you know. Well, did pretty well with that for a while. Finally, it turned around, and I lost it all. You know what I mean?
With those great commercials. You know, I even sent away for a Soul Brother medallion in the early 60s. I remember you were advertising them. The commercials, John R., did you buy your time? Did you sell commercials? What's the story on that?
No. Well, most of the commercials you're talking about were PIs, per inquiry type business, mail order things. Is that what you mean?
That's right.
Well, no, those things were placed by the agencies, and the copy was given to me, which I proceeded to read over once or twice and throw it in the trash can and ad-lib from there on. You know, I did most of my spots ad-lib. I'd get a good one, I'd put it on tape, and I'd keep it, and I'd use it for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and I'd ad-lib some more, and I got another good one, you know?
Right.
Small weight, and that sort of thing's what you're talking about. Baby chicks, so on, right?
That's right. Oh, those are some of the classic radio commercials of all time, John R. You did a great job on those.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I've got several of those things, Norman. I'll put them on tape one of these days, 4 or 5 of them, and send them up to you.
Hey, I think we'd love to hear that.
Would you like? All right, I'll be happy to do it, man. You know, it's very flattering. It really is flattering for me to have you tell me that people still remember John R. in your part of the country.
Or John R., as he's known, who passed away of cancer at the age of 75, February 15th, 1986. The interview recorded about 3 years or so ago. I'm Norman B.
We live in bad conditions, Lloyd Price. My time has come and gone, friend. It's 2:45 now. It's time to say so long for this Saturday night. Look here, we'll be right here again Tuesday through Saturday, you know, laying down a good sound on programs then. Like to have you with me. Thanks for listening. Be careful out there on the highway now, will you? This is John R. way down south in Dixie. WLAC, the 1510 spot on the dial in Nashville.
Circle, Lewis filed divorce papers against Carrie Lewis last December.